is our cold open.
I'm just started recording after just completely fucking up the very first episode after not being here for how many months has it been?
So many months.
A long time, huh?
We haven't done this since like August, I think.
I think so. And now we're back.
And welcome to Rough Cut.
I'm Alan Simich.
And I'm JB Jones.
And here we go.
Year three of Rough Cut.
We can't believe we're doing it again. So we're doing this fucking introduction for a second time.
Yeah.
Because I just mucked it up.
Yeah.
And it was
we really forgot how to do it.
Wow.
So.
Did I ever know?
Let's start with this. About, I don't know, last December maybe, we had a phone call and we were like, let's never do the podcast again.
So, yes, that is what happened. The reason you've not heard from us for so long is because
we
had a long heart-to-heart, and we actually quit the show without ever announcing that we officially quit the show, which is also...
I think we kind of feel like you guys listen, and we're just always shocked.
Yeah, we're always just completely baffled by the fact that anybody wants to go through this with us. But we were like,
no one will miss it.
Nobody will notice. Nobody will notice. But then we got the DMs and people did notice.
Yeah, that's true. So we decide, a couple things happened, which we're going to share right now. Three exciting bits of information we'll share with you is why we're back. So first one, you ready?
I'm ready.
To launch into it?
I'm here.
Okay. So first one is we're a grown-up podcast now and an independent entity. We are no longer under the umbrella of NYC Jewelry Week, which... it's neither bad nor good. We're just excited to expand our horizons.
Exactly. It gives us the freedom to spread our wings in ways that we weren't able to before, not necessarily because of any restrictions imposed on us by Jewelry Week, but because of the nature of us being associated and under the Jewelry Week umbrella. We were in
a lot
position.
Of commitments.
We had a lot of commitments, and you know, we were dealing with people who were involved with Jewelry Week that we wanted to also support on the podcast, and it just made for
work.
It felt like work. It wasn't
so hard.
And honestly, if I'm completely frank, it got to a point where it felt like a second job and it wasn't fun anymore.
And we don't want to really work hard.
I never want to work hard.
We're always working hard. So I guess we just were like, let's not do it.
I want to luxuriate.
Yeah. So, but now, you know, now we have this brand new idea, right?
We're going to do our own thing. It's not a new idea. But it is basically a new format of the show.
Yes. So second bit of news, exciting news, is that I also am no longer a part of Jewelry Week, although still its biggest supporter, biggest fan.
And we will be there.
November 18th through 24th.
That's right. You'll see us running around, doing whatever the fuck we usually do. I don't even know what value we contribute to anything, but we will do that.
Wait, I get to say the line that I wanted to say.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You're actually telling them that you're about to read a line.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The level of professionalism has not changed. Creative projects.
Yeah.
Which, like, people say all the time. And now I get to say it.
You're a free woman. You went on to pursue and to find yourself. You know what my old trainer Alejandro said to me? I'm going to go travel the world to find myself.
Oh.
I said, fuck you. Wow. But now I have a new trainer, Jamal, and he's wonderful.
That's nice. Good story. Yeah.
Great story. I love that we're back.
We're back.
People are already like,
what else is on this podcast? Okay. So part three, very, very exciting part. You want to talk about this?
Yeah. Do you want to spin this around so we can awkwardly read this for everyone? Jesus Christ. So, and the other kind of exciting thing about the show
and the
is,
real reason we're back.
Please interrupt me while I'm trying to read this fucking thing.
Yeah. Okay.
That's so helpful right now.
Because you never interrupt me.
No, I've never done that to you. But the other exciting thing and another reason that we're back is that we always had a lot of ambitions for what the show was going to be. And again, like we said, there were other commitments that we, you know, had to people and to Jewelry Week and that sort of thing. But we were always more ambitious than that in our point of view. And now that...
hard-hitting journalism.
I mean, we were always very serious reporters.
I think you've said that numerous times.
Numerous times. Yeah. Long-form, serious journalism.
Watch out, Peabody.
I used to walk down a street. People would say to me, is that Christiane Amanpour? No, it's just Alain. No one said that. Yes, shut up. You don't know my life. You don't live here.
You also have new jewelry on, which I just realized.
Well, can we get through this?
Let me describe it for you guys.
in painful detail. Please do. But anyway, it gives us the opportunity to evolve the format, which is what we intend to do with the show. It's not going to be like the rough cut you used to know. I mean, elements of that will be there. Obviously, as you can hear, these two bozos are still hosts. So we're going to be evolving the format of the podcast. We want to allow for richer storytelling. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to go deeper. And we want to have more impactful explorations of jewelry and of the world's, you know, hottest topics and beyond.
Yes.
So we want to grow our horizon. We want to grow the audience. We want to talk about all the things that we feel very passionately about as human beings and that we feel we have expertise to contribute to a real meaningful conversation.
Yes.
And kind of the best part about all of this, in my view, is that we are not just back, but changing up the format, we're back with two incredibly talented individuals who will be co-hosting and co-producing the show with us, and that is noted journalists, women on the game,
working girls,
Amy Elliott and Emily Vesselant. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Yay,
we're so excited.
So excited to be here with Christian Amanpour.
Oh, you're very welcome. The honor is yours, obviously.
You guys, Amy and I are good friends and have worked together for years, and we are just beyond excited. We're elated. We're thrilled.
We love to talk about jewelry. It's such a pleasure, and we loved the podcast in its previous form. We're so excited to be part of it and really excited for this next phase, so thanks for having us on.
Thank you so much for lying to our faces.
You nailed it.
Yeah, you nailed it. It was. I totally believed you.
So what we're going to do today on this very first episode of Year 3 of Rough Cut is get to know each other, talk about what we're going to talk about this year, and also dig into like what we want to share and why this approach is going to be a little bit different, but exciting.
And the way that we're going to get to know each other is that we are currently sat at a table completely nude. Across from
correct.
One another.
That's right. That was the stipulation of joining this gang.
It's how we're gonna induct the women into the cult.
That's right. And then we get branded.
And then that's at the end. That's at the end. Yeah, that's not happening now. Yeah. We have a show to record.
We have a guy.
You have to lure us in. You have to convert us.
Yeah, there's a guy who has to come. You know,
there's a massage table in the back.
Yeah, we're gonna give you strange drinks and tonics as well. Yeah, it'll be great.
Spirits.
Yes, spirits.
Oh my god.
But we thought what would be fun to do and how we can also, JB and I, reintroduce ourselves to the audience is we're going to kind of interview each other today and talk with one another and get to know each other and also explain why it is that we're doing this, where we want to go, what we're hoping to accomplish, all of that good stuff.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Well, I'm going to start because I love to start conversations and I have so many questions for all of you, even though I know all of you fairly well. Mm-hmm. But JB, I am obsessed with fresh starts, new chapters, new beginnings. Love I it. Just think they are wonderful for anyone who can embark on them. Yeah. So I'm excited for your next phase. But I also want to know what kind of creative projects. What kind of creative projects?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Well, in shocking news, they're jewelry related.
Yes.
Mostly.
Ooh.
I mean, it is just to talk about that fresh start. It's so exciting. I mean, it was a very hard decision to leave Jewelry Week, of course, because it's been 6 years that I've been a part of it. And it's like a baby. Bella and I always referred to it as a baby. And I kind of feel like, okay, now the baby needs to go to boarding school with Bella, right? Like, it's time for me to move on. But I still love it so much, and I want to see it thrive and take over the world. So I'm excited to see what happens without me. Like, the new iteration of what it'll be is exciting. But I very much wanted to pursue creative stuff. Like I said, it's not a joke. I just really wanted to start doing some stuff that I felt was more fulfilling for my path. I'm old now, and it just kind of hit that time where I was like, you know,
nonsense.
I want to be doing this instead of
that.
You're
in your best years.
In my best years, guys. Truly.
Can I ask you a journalist question?
Mm-hmm.
How did you get your start in jewelry? I actually have no idea. I feel I came to the first New York City Jewelry Week.
Vis-a-vis the porn career.
And they were like, she's so obviously right for jewelry.
Yeah. Did you all the
yeah.
Tell me,
like, it's funny that you say that, because I feel that too. And like, I'm not going to leave that industry.
You're not going to leave jewelry.
Very much staying in it. Still doing marketing and consulting. Doing creative projects with the Jewelry Library, who I've been working with over the past few years, but really trying to put those forward.
Yeah, they're great.
But that I got into jewelry really because of Bella. I had just moved to New York and I had a street art gallery in Los Angeles. Wasn't sure like what I was going to do here. I met Bella. She was at that time doing her own projects in contemporary jewelry curation and asked me if I would collaborate on a street art and jewelry project with Fantastic. Her exhibition. And I was like, what is contemporary jewelry? And so we partnered artists and did a show in Meatpacking, and it was hugely successful. We sold a ton of jewelry. And I also fell in love with contemporary jewelry because it kind of had all the things I love, like fashion, which was what I went to school for. It had the storytelling and it had that involvement with the artist. I really love getting an artist story out there and learning why they do what they do. And I love wearing it. And so I'm really happy to be that intermediary. And I think Jewelry Week really filled that spot for me for a long time. But I want to, I think I just need to do something a little smaller.
Yeah.
Just more my speed.
Yeah. It makes so much sense that you have a background in art and fashion, because I feel like you just don't care about the material. Like, you care about the material a lot, but in terms of like the things that you love in jewelry, it's always art forward.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah,
it's true.
I really love that, like how jewelry is like truly wearable art, right? You can tell your story through it. The fashion part is so fascinating to me, and I love like inspiring people to wear it differently. But also, I love getting inspired by how people are wearing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've always had a knack for uncovering, you know, and showing us on your Instagram in particular, like designers we never know about. And I really like that. And I hope that your new path involves discovering those talents and sharing them with everyone.
I know this is going to sound terrible, but I sort of felt like contemporary jewelry was a little lame. Until because
no,
I was
not the only one.
I know I think I equated it with sort of the like my mom's generation.
Yes,
and let's go to Chico's and let's go to the sort of like
podunky,
not Chico. You know what I mean?
Chico's
like
girl.
Just like pottery, like
just like
craft fair pottery stuff.
Yeah, and so I will say that your Instagram feed has been a total revelation to me, and I mean that sincerely. Mm-hmm. Like introducing us to artists like Georgina Trevino some of these people out here making just wild and incredible jewelry, and because of you I have invested in some contemporary jewelry. I know.
Ooh. That's so
I know
cool.
And I also honestly, because of you, I don't like revere the precious metals like I used to.
Really?
I know.
Wow.
I know.
Look at you.
That's
so
thank you.
Cool.
I know.
Wow. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So I am so thrilled to be working with you for that, because you have been an influence personally on me. Yes.
Oh, she's
thanks,
an influencer.
Guys.
She is.
Ooh. Look at that.
I love that.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens next. You can hire me if you want.
Yes, you absolutely should hire her.
But yeah, we have some cool projects we're working on for Jewelry Week. Hopefully they'll accept them. So we can show them later.
Wouldn't
this
that be
year.
Funny? If they're like, no, we rejected yours.
No, I mean, I don't know.
It's not
proposals.
Really up to snuff. It's not really up to snuff. Yeah.
I know someone, I'll call her.
Right. I love it.
That would be funny.
All right, and also one last question for you.
Yeah.
And then maybe we interview others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Where do you buy your clothes?
Oh.
Speaking of influential, you're such a great snappy dresser.
Yes.
I do.
Style icon.
I mean,
yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Iconique.
Wow.
Yes.
It's so funny Emily says this, because I feel the same about her. I'm always
aww.
Like, yeah. I feel like, yeah, we were meant to be here together.
Yes.
I don't know. I just mix it up. Like, I wear a lot of vintage. I love, like, menswear.
Yes.
So I love to like mix that in. I shop in a lot of guys' departments.
Mm-hmm. We have that
just
in common.
Cut the legs. Yeah.
You cut the legs.
Fits are better.
And then sew the underarm. Yeah. So it's like a smaller hole. Yes. And then you've got it.
Or cut it off. Yeah. I use scissors a lot.
Me
actually,
too.
In my clothes. Right. But yeah, I think it's not to me so much about where I'm getting it, but like the proportions, right? Wherever I can find something cute. I'm just like, I don't know.
I've wanted to know, so thank you.
All over the place.
Yeah.
That's my fashion advice, guys.
So I like it.
We're going to link your fashion IG influencer account below.
Yes.
I should start doing the outfits of the day.
Oh, my,
right?
God. Oh my
gosh, yes.
Please don't do that. Please don't do
that. I love it. I love that.
Alon, that sweater is so cool. I'm going to describe it in detail.
Oh, my God. Jesus fucking Christ.
So
please
let me
do.
Wait.
Oh,
good. But let's talk about the background of those types of things, right? Because Alon, when Amy and I were sitting here before we hit record, Alon was like, I love it when you describe a piece of jewelry in nitty gritty detail.
Yeah.
He thinks it's ridiculous.
We're in audio format.
We're in audio format.
Lend itself
he
to
says,
the format.
I will never. Google
I will never
it.
Allow
it. I will never Google
it. I will never allow it. I will never Google it.
And I will never Google it. And JB's like, maybe I'd Google it. And he's like,
definitely
no.
Google it.
I know you would Google it.
I would be like,
but
I know
what
you do.
Okay, but I want to say, the sweater is so cool.
Thank
it looks
you.
Like it looks like a little rat like went along the edge of your V-neck.
What a compliment.
And like chewed the little edge. It's a deconstructed
degradé.
Cool. It's cashmere,
and
but
it looks
degradé.
Like luxe, but also like it's been torn apart, and I like it.
Yeah, I like that too. And it's fun and oversized. And
it's like
gives me good cleavage too.
There's a lot of that going around.
There's a lot of that here today.
There's a lot of cleavage at this table.
Because we're naked.
Amy has a great jumpsuit.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of Amy Elliott today.
As we should.
As we should.
Oh my God.
Exactly. Amy, you go, Jamie.
No, I was going to ask Alon another question since we're interviewing each other. One of the exciting things about this year is that you want to do more longer form content.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us like what have you been thinking about for so long that you wish we could have done that?
Just as far as kind of past episodes that we've done, I mean, you know, we've scratched the surface of very serious and important topics within the industry. You know, we've done topics about greenwashing with Emily. You know, we've talked about, you know, the whole thing about lab diamonds with Amy here. We've had sort of conversations that I wish the format had allowed us to do something like a multi-part series where we could bring in loads of experts, loads of guests to speak on different sort of aspects of each issue that we wanted to cover. And, you know, because of the way that we did things before, we just couldn't schedule things that way. And also we kind of, every episode had to live as its own thing as well. And we would have a guest and things were centered around that guest and that was the format. And in part, it was also easier for us to produce a good amount of content doing things that way because we could move from episode to episode and we would have somebody on, schedule them. We'd have like 3-4 people back to back and we would be able to knock out, you know, a couple months worth of content. But that's when it started to feel like work again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm, you know, anybody who knows me in my personal life knows that I'm the kind of person who wakes up every day and is in some way, shape, or form panicking about climate change, which is not a healthy way to live, but it is, you know, a reality of the world that we live in. And I wish that we could sort of explore a topic like that in a much, much deeper way, make them relevant to the industry as well, but also broaden the conversations, because I think that's important too.
I do agree with that, like, broadening that conversation, because I think all of us here are deeply invested in the industry, but like the topics that we are allowed to talk about are so limited. And one of the things Alon had said is he wants this show to be fearless, and I think all of us have kind of come together on that front to be like, okay, now we're going to talk about whatever we want.
Correct. and I know that I'm at a table with three incredibly fearless and opinionated women. And that's why I'm so excited to have this cohort doing this now all together, because I think we're able to do something that frankly doesn't really exist in this industry. We can be pioneers in that way.
Absolutely.
And we can do things that, you know, people have not done before in a kind of podcast format as far as jewelry goes. And I think we draw on many a variety of experiences and expertise that can enrich everything that we do together.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear everyone's opinions because everyone is opinionated here.
Yes. Oh, you mean our opinions? I thought you meant like our listeners' opinions.
Yeah. I was
like,
I'm not
sure
yet.
I was like, I'm not sure.
I don't. Don't by the way, can yet. I please tell you? Please don't tell us your opinions. We don't want to hear from you.
We do.
Well, send them to Emily then. Don't send your goddamn fucking DMs to me. How about that? Send them to
open for DMs.
Yeah, send her those.
Speaking of the types of things that we talked about wanting to talk about, Amy Elliott, journalist extraordinaire. I know that you are
GEM Awards nominee.
GEM Awards nominee. Mm-hmm. Yes. I know that we are. I know that you are super involved in politics, and that you have.
Oh my God!
Yeah, jumping right in.
She blushed.
And that you have written some really thought-provoking stories on politics and jewelry and
people
who have been outspoken, versus quiet about. Sort of the political landscape. And I know that you hope to this season dive into some of those questions too, which I think is super exciting.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is an election year, guys. So I might
be, incredibly important.
I'm going to be like stumping every single episode that I'm on.
Good.
But yeah, I live in a small town in New England, in Connecticut. And I live in a town such that, my liberal views can have an impact because they are equally, both sides of the aisle are well represented.
Is it a purple district?
I would say it's, I'd say they vote Democrat in national elections, but largely Republican controlled locally.
Interesting.
And,
when I lived in Brooklyn, there were a number of people that it was covered off on, politics. No need to kind of tune in, but there's just so much room for me to be involved and have an impact. And, the algorithm serves up lots of stuff I want to share.
I'm sure.
I do a lot of that, hopefully to, empower others and to be embolden others. To share their opinions and whatever. So it is, I think a lot about the political situation, but mainly I found it healthy to kind of funnel it into a local milieu so as not to be completely depressed all the time and hypertension and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a productive way for me to use my time.
It absolutely seems to me congruous that you are involved in local politics and involved in helping candidates, kind of down ballot candidates, because you have spent your career as a jewelry journalist unveiling and revealing and sharing the great jewelers, small jewelers, like independent jewelers and designers that you love and that you know deserve attention. A lot of your work sort of revolves around that, right?
Absolutely.
So it's all sort of part of the same kind of, it's part of the same way that you have of walking through the world, right?
Yeah, just storytelling in
general.
Storytelling,
but also supporting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Surfacing the unsung voices, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And
your Instagram feed, by the way, is also incredibly inspiring. And I mean, when you came to JCK, because I was at JCK, which we can talk about us being at JCK, but, and Amy, you still are at JCK.
Contributing editor.
Contributing editor.
My
right?
opinions are my own.
Yes, exactly.
Woman on the game.
Yes, exactly. But we worked together for maybe 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. You started writing about designers that I was just blown out of the water by, just really incredible talents, and you have a knack for supporting and bolstering those people and just finding those people, So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm impressed with your journalistic chops more than anything. I think you've got great taste, beautiful speaking voice, as we've all discussed.
Oh, yeah. Velvet sensual.
Velvety.
But you're like a real news journalist. And that's something that I've always really admired. And I want you to tell people about a little bit about your backstory in the newsroom and stuff, because I think it's really important because it influences how you approach stories.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ames. So I was a daily news writer, but always on the soft side on fashion, fashion mainly, fashion starting. So started at, to go back, I worked at Rob Report and some home magazines where I was like a senior editor putting together edit on really fancy kitchen faucets wrote a story on the firmness of luxury mattresses.
Oh.
So those were early days. Still love Rob Report. amazing. And then moved east because I was in Los Angeles during that time. But when I was in Los Angeles, I was a reporter for the LA Times for the section that they called Image. I'm not sure if it still exists, but mm-hmm. I was a daily reporter on the fashion beat, and it was an invigorating, incredible experience because I was with a team of 5 or 6 editors and writers who were just top of their game, and I felt like just a complete fraud. And that's a great place to be before you have kids and before you sort of have more responsibilities. So I feel really lucky that I had a couple of years there. And before that, I was at Women's Wear Daily and covered retail for the West Coast for Women's Wear Daily for 2 years, which was really like the beginning of figuring out how to meet a deadline. And I went from, I remember just a little aside, the first day I sat down, my editor from New York called. His name was Rich Rosen. I'm not sure if he's still there. And he said, "You got an hour to write this, kid." Wow. And I literally, like, my tongue, like, rolled back and almost choked me because I just was so deeply nervous.
That's so terrifying.
Jeez. It was terrifying. And I came from the Robb Report where I was writing about mattresses and faucets and had a lot, like, a week to write those stories, you know? And wow. Suddenly it was like, you know, bang, bang, bang. Women's Wear was great training grounds. Ashley Davis at National Jeweler, well, she just left National Jeweler. She also was at Women's Wear and she says the same thing. I mean, it just was like fast, fast, fast. Sometimes 2 stories a day. It was going out a lot at night. It was during the sort of like indie sleaze era in LA where Robertson Boulevard was sort of like the center of the city, and there were a lot of private parties, and you know, the movie industry mixes with fashion out there, and jewelry was becoming a thing, and it was just a really exciting time. I was in heels every night and had just an awesome sort of like, you know, cutting my teeth in style journalism. So it was fun. It was really fun. Then of course 2008 came, everything exploded, the housing crisis, almost all of us at the LA Times were laid off.
Wow.
Yeah, it was gnarly. I stayed on as a beauty writer for a while and then moved back east because I had babies and my family was all sort of incredible. In the DC area, and then worked at JCK for a little over a decade.
Yeah, you were there a long time.
Yeah, which JCK is in my heart forever.
I do
that. Man, that's a good gig.
It is.
I'm sure.
I also have legacy media in my background too. Just like,
tell us a little
about
that.
I started my career in the bridal space. So I worked at The Knot. I worked at Bridal Guide. I worked at Brides.
She is an engagement expert.
I know a lot about engagement rings. Fantastic. I was like their engagement ring expert on about.com, like when that existed. So I was, I worked at Condé Nast for a number of years, and then I actually went over to Lucky Magazine, the late great Lucky, and worked there for
such
a little
a
bit.
Good magazine. Loved
it was so much fun. Oh my God, I learned so much. Just my purview, like just of what, you know, good jewelry designers were out there, and like how to like refine your taste to suit this particular audience. It was really, really helpful and really great. But I too was part of a mass layoff in 2012. Wow. So and I've been freelance ever since, doing a little of this,
amazing,
a little of that. Yeah. So I guess it's our age. I'm only just Gen X. We hit it at the wrong time,
but
man.
I'll tell you, I know we hit it at the wrong time, but we got a taste of that like sort of sweet old school journalist life for like a decade.
Yep. Yes.
And then it kind of all imploded. But I always feel fortunate that I'm not coming in now.
Oh, that's true. Because I think it's 5 stories a day.
Yeah, I mean, it's just freelance now, essentially.
You're very lucky to have had that experience and the opportunity. Yeah,
yeah,
because that's something that when I was at university, you know, we always referenced kind of the golden years. Of journalism and that sort of thing. And by the time I graduated, you know, that time was over, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you a question, Alon.
Yes.
You are a fabulous, incredible photographer. How did you...
To all.
But I always wonder, how did you... Because jewelry is, I feel to me... I was in a shoot all day yesterday. So hard to capture. So hard to photograph.
Oh, are you fucking kidding me?
I mean, all the reflections that bounce
so
off it.
I want to blow my brains out every day.
I mean, you must want to blow your brains out
every
day.
I do.
So tell me how you chose jewelry. What drew you in?
I didn't choose it. I didn't choose it at all. It wasn't the path I had in mind for myself at all. I'll tell you a little bit about kind of how I ended up here and the trajectory my career took, which was, I'm still, whenever I think back on it, amazed about where I started and how I ended up in this space. But I went to Indiana University, where I went, I attended the Ernie Pyle School of Journalism, which was
great school.
An amazing school. And I was very, very proud to go there and to be able to graduate from there. And I aspired specifically to attend that journalism school because I knew that it was one of the best in the country. And I was, and still am, very passionate about storytelling and journalism specifically. I had, you know, people who know me, you know my background. I'm from Bosnia. We lived through a war. My family were refugees to Germany. And I remember from a very early time in my life, seeing footage. I wasn't sort of, you know, able to see this while it was happening live, but seeing footage of Christiane Amanpour on CNN speaking to the world about Bosnia and saying things that nobody wanted to say at the time. Saying the words genocide for the first time on television when everybody was hedging and they didn't want to say it. And they knew that if they said it, NATO would have to get involved. And, you know, it was there was a lot of politics around the situation. But what was happening was genocide, and nobody other than, you know, Serbian nationalists today would contest that. At the time, she was one of the only people willing to say that, especially one of the only people working for such a large network and speaking to such a broad audience, a global audience. And showing the footage.
Incredible.
And seeing what was happening and seeing, you know, like internment camps and that sort of thing and what was happening to the population. I remember seeing her say those words and I was so moved and I found it so powerful. And knowing what I knew at the time about her background as well, knowing where she came from and sort of what her life looked like prior to her, you know, career and all of that, I looked at that and I didn't know what shape it would take for me, but I remember saying to myself, that's what I want to do. I don't know what this is. I don't know what, you know, what it's going to look like on my end and what skill set I have that can contribute to this, but this is what I need to do. I felt so compelled, and I felt more strongly about that than anything else I've ever felt about in my life. And I knew, okay, I need to go to journalism school. This is what I need to learn. This is what I need to study. Because that, her saying those words was, to anybody who's from Bosnia, you have no idea the kind of impact that, that has, the way that you feel seen.
Wow.
The way that it kind of just feels as though when you're in a situation like that and nothing is being done as far as intervention is concerned, and I don't care if this is a controversial statement, much like what's happening in Gaza.
Right.
Genocide full on.
The parallel is so rich right now.
The parallels are there. And I've been on that end of it. My family's lived through literal hell. I mean, we don't have stories that are nearly as horrible as what people have endured in Bosnia. And hearing just somebody in the West say something like that, the impact that has on people's lives, the real impact that it has on people's lives and the way that it forces the hands of people in charge who make the policies, I thought, this is it.
Wow.
So I really wanted to go to the Ernie Pyle Journalism School.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated there with a journalism degree, and I ended up specializing in photojournalism by sheer chance and accident. I just picked up a camera one day, and I thought, this is a tool that makes sense to me to use. I had no aspirations to do commercial photography ever in my life.
No.
And I had zero interest in photography before this. Zero.
So you were thinking photojournalism.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I thought, I'll travel and I'll tell stories. And that'll be my superpower in this life. I'll travel and I'll tell stories. I remember hearing and speak at my university while I was in undergrad, Alexandra Avakian, an amazing photojournalist who's not talked about a lot, but is one of the most talented, I feel, in the field. And she had just sort of, she's also a cancer survivor, and she had just gone through a bout of chemo before coming to speak at my university. And she was telling her stories and her time in the field, and she covered Israel, and, you know, she covered the West Bank and sort of stories like that. And she traveled and, you know, covered Bosnia to some extent, but she traveled all over the world and had, you know, has such an incredible aesthetic as a photographer and has such an eye for beauty, even with the most horrible things that she was taking pictures of.
Yeah.
You know, one of her most famous photographs was IDF soldiers sort of beating the living hell out of children in the West Bank.
Oh, God.
And there was blood on the concrete and, you know, there was stuff like that. And it was... the way she captures things. I used to always say when I was a student, it's... I can see her language as a woman coming through, because there was always a sense of dignity.
Okay.
Her work to me never felt exploitative. It felt like we're honoring the story, we're telling it as it is, but we're honoring and respecting the people who are part of those stories too in their lives. Because the work can fundamentally feel very exploitative when you're doing it.
Yeah.
You're in the field and you're taking photos of people who are in horrible conditions
or
sometimes.
Or in pain. Or, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So there's that element of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I traveled to Nepal and India. I did stories and photo essays about women and children in post-conflict zones.
Wow.
I felt very passionately about that, given my own background. And I spent, you know, months in a Tibetan orphanage in Nepal with 53 kids. I had to work to be able to stay
this.
There.
This is incredible.
I had to cook and clean and cook the rice and do all of that and make dal bhat, which anybody who's been to Nepal, you know what dal bhat is. It's lentils and rice, but it's a very specific dish to the region.
Okay.
And I ate nothing but dal bhat for many months, which was not fun. I'll say that. But I lived with those kids, and I got to take their photos and tell their stories in my own little
incredible
small way.
Yeah.
You know? And that felt rewarding. Then came a point where it felt too painful.
I can see that.
I found for me that I didn't have the stomach for it. That's the honest truth. Because I remember the children that I met, and I'm not a kid-friendly person, and I'm not like a child person in general in my life, but the kids that I met there were some of the most incredible human beings I've ever met in my life, and I still think about them every day.
Oh.
And that was like, I just couldn't do that anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Too heavy, too much pain.
I just couldn't do it. It wasn't for
me. I hear you.
I was made of whatever you need to be made of to do that.
Yes.
And to see it all the time.
There's no, no understanding that unless you're like living in it, because the minute that you get to know people like that, that who are in those circumstances and feeling that pain, it's impossible to extricate yourself emotionally if you're a person who's feeling and loving.
I don't know how people do it. I don't know how people do it. And, you know, we talked extensively in journalism classes about, you know, leaving it there. And are you a communitarian kind of journalist? Are you an objectivist kind of journalist? Mm-hmm. What is kind of the mode of thinking? And, you know, all of those concepts. And I just found that whatever it is that I am, and I don't even know how to, you know, qualify it, I couldn't do it. And then when I moved to New York, I came here with, you know, nothing but a mountain of credit card debt.
Yeah.
I ended up working for Steve McCurry. And
National Geographic.
Yeah. Again, the golden years, the golden age of journalism, Nat Geo.
Which, you know, my dad was a writer during those golden years there.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He was the senior expeditions editor at National Geographic, like, through the 90s.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that truly is the golden age.
Yes. Oh,
I
totally.
I bet you he
flew first class until, his final years, until, the early 2000s.
I bet you he knew
imagine
some of my...
first class for a
I
magazine,
I can't even
Amy.
Imagine. For National...
Oh, no.
For National Geographic.
No.
Exactly.
Not Vogue.
To that point, and you make an excellent point right there. I mean, first of all, I'm pretty sure he knew several of my professors at IU.
I
bet. Steve Raymer was a famous photographer at Nat Geo, and I'm sure your dad would have known him.
Do you know Cotton Colson?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so he was... that was his, like, one of his very best friends.
I mean, it's that's a very small...
very small
circle
thing.
Of
Jody
people.
Cobb.
Yes.
Jody Cobb, my
exactly.
favorite, like, photojournalist ever.
They all kind of... that it's the same generation of people, and they were all kind of there at the same time.
Great days for that.
When I worked for Steve McCurry, I discovered commercial photography. And then I thought, oh, maybe this skill set can then translate to something that I can actually pay my bills with, too. And to your earlier point, is, you know, when that whole world, Nat Geo, by the time I graduated from university, that was already gone.
Was
Nat Geo was around.
Yeah.
But getting a budget for them to put you up somewhere for 3 months
tell
one story, that doesn't happen.
I'll tell you, I am now going through my father. My father passed away a few months ago.
I'm so sorry for that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I am going for his celebration of life, going through all his old stories to pick out some of sort of my slivers of his favorite writing. Mm-hmm. Those stories are like 60 pages sometimes.
Oh my God.
Just the sort of like luxury of space to be mm-hmm. able to fully tell a community story. I just think it's incredible, and it's a huge missing link in our storytelling landscape.
I agree.
Now,
I agree. Whole industry has suffered because we've lost the ability to do things in that way and to tell those kinds of stories.
And we've lost our attention span.
Well, yeah.
The audience has changed too.
Yeah.
The audience has changed too.
No, I do feel the current, I can't remember the name of the editor. Is it Nathan Lump? I think he's the editor of National Geographic now. Mm-hmm. And I do sort of feel his pain when I go through the Modern magazine now mm-hmm. because he wants to show the world and he wants to show us things we've never seen in the world. Mm-hmm. That's sort of always been one of Nat Geo's mandates,
yes.
you know,
mm-hmm.
let us bring you to these like sort of remote places. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he has to grapple with the Instagram generation,
yeah.
basically
right.
us, where we're just like flip, 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 you know, and people don't linger.
Right. We only want to see
on
Amalfi.
40-page like, story,
yeah, exactly.
you know?
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, don't show me, show me. I want to see Amalfi in like South of France.
Oh my God.
That's it, yeah. But yeah, and then, you know, I found commercial photography that way and ended up working for photographers here in the city. I happened to work for one guy who was like the biggest douchebag asshole I ever met in my life, who happened to specialize in jewelry. And after enduring him for a year, I was like, get me the fuck out of here. I was broke. I had credit card debt. I had no money.
Did you take his business? I hope you took his business.
Oh, I cleaned it up. No, but he does still to this day accuse me of doing that.
Oh,
which was now, I haven't worked for him since like 8 years ago now. It's been.
It's like.
But
right,
it's
buddy.
Like, okay, dude, move on.
Yeah.
But when I discovered that as a niche, I thought we can, and at the time I was thinking with him, we can build something really lucrative together because there are so few people who specialize in this.
It's so hard to do well.
It's so hard to do well. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I can help him. I can help him get his shit together and we can really turn this into something. And then after a year of putting up with him, I wanted to blow my own brains out. And I had no money. I was only making like under $3,000 a month, which in New York City is nothing.
Right.
And I said to myself,
rent.
That's just rent.
That's rent.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Yeah.
That's all I was making. And I said to myself, you know what? My mental health is not worth it. Even that $3,000. Goodbye. I left. Mm-hmm. One of his, at the time, clients reached out to me because I had to announce to the clientele that I was no longer sort of head producer.
Sure.
Reaches out to me and says, what are you gonna do next? I said, I'm applying for jobs because I need the fucking money. I'm broke.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'll be your client. And she was a big
nice.
Brand. She was a known, respected big brand. I'll be your client. Mm. You'll start your own thing and we can put a shoot on the books now.
Wow.
I rented gear.
Yeah.
I figured out my shit. Started working with her. Very grateful to her to this day. And because I don't know what business I could have built without that. I remember my first year in business, I made like 40K net and that felt huge.
That is huge.
That
for
felt
the first year.
Yes.
And I was living in a walk up in Bushwick and I was like, am I rich?
Yes.
You are rich.
That is like, oh my God, you were rich.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So that was
amazing.
Incredible. And then it just took off. And ever since then, almost every year, my business has nearly doubled. And now we shot global campaigns for Sotheby's. We've worked with Muzo. We've worked with De Beers. I mean, we've had incredible clientele. And incredible also, like, you know, our industry here in New York clientele, like Greenwich Street Jewelers, I get to work with them and call Jennifer a friend. And, you know, so it's opened in many ways, and this sounds melodramatic, it's like given me a life.
I know what you mean.
It's
given.
I don't know what I would be doing if those sequence of events didn't happen in that way.
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up here. And I've been on my own now for almost 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel that sort of jewelry giving you a life because
for sure.
when I was laid off from the LA Times, I just did not know what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't. And I thought, okay, this is an inflection point. Should I try something else? Should I, you know, go into PR? What should I do? Answered this random ad on Media Bistro for JCK. For 2 years, they were based in Washington, D.C. I was planning to go to Washington, D.C. and live there,
mm-hmm.
which has zero style editorial opportunities.
Really?
I mean,
well,
zero.
Why did I sound surprised? I was like,
I mean,
really? They don't have fashion
zero.
In D.C.?
I mean, so in the negative, it would shock you. So yeah, and it just, it sort of, it also, I believe, sort of jewelry kind of like buoyed me and kept me going, and then
it focused
mm-hmm. me, right? And then after a couple of years, I was like, oh, I like this way more than fashion.
why is that so, that you think you like it better?
I think the jewelry is more egalitarian. I mean, it fits everybody. You can, it doesn't fit everybody. I shouldn't say that. But it doesn't really have to do with size. Mm-hmm. And as a fashion journalist, it has so much to do with size, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was definitely sort of the girl in the office that would get like the, because a lot of freebies would come into the LA Times and into Women's Wear Daily. And it was sort of like, I was sample size shoe, you know? And it's not about like, I don't love jewelry because I get free stuff, because I definitely do not. And I wouldn't want it anyway. Long story short, I liked that it was available to everybody, though obviously price is prohibitive. But I also love that it's about art, I think, so much more than it is about function. And I think when you're looking for a coat, when you're looking for a sweater, you're looking at proportions, you're sort of doing like a mathematical equation of how it's going to clothe your particular body. Mm-hmm. With jewelry, I mean, there are sort of ring things, but with earrings, with pendants, with necklaces, with bracelets, it doesn't really matter how it, I mean, I'm going to fly in the face of like sort of the Robert Lee Morris, Donna Karan, like sinewy jewelry that moves with you, because obviously a lot of people, Marina B, who just passed, definitely believed that it should be super comfortable. Mm-hmm. But honestly, it doesn't have to be. To be beautiful, mm-hmm. to be impactful, yeah. and to really make a style statement. You know, and I think jewelry, like, we're all sort of, nobody's walking around in a clown costume. We all look somewhat similar in how we dress in the era that we are in. You know, like, there are outliers, there are really bold personal style dressers. Yes. But in general, like, we're wearing a sweater, we're wearing a jacket. Mm-hmm. But like, JB can show up with some like cool tiara. Or yes. Amy
body
can have,
chain,
body chain. Yeah. That's right. You did that.
And Amy can have like some brooch that's like exploding. Mm-hmm. Bella can wear a paper earring, you know, which she has. No. But I think I like the sort of frivolity of it.
Yeah. Yes.
And how it's,
I do too.
It's
that's
an
what I love
extra.
About it.
It is an extra. Yeah. Clothing is not optional. We have to have it. Jewelry is an extra, and it makes it feel more luxurious to me.
I think love one that. Interesting point you touched on as well, and to something that you said to JB too, is I knew nothing about jewelry before I sort of landed here. And I have so much grown to appreciate the artistry, the craftsmanship. You know, we know so many independent jewelers who make the most beautiful, mm-hmm. expensive, incredible things at a bench by themselves with their hands. I didn't know that
magical,
was even a thing.
It's magical, right?
But it's magic.
It is.
It's magic. And it's then really magical to buy something mm-hmm. from somebody like that.
Well, yeah. I wanted to just go back to Emily's career because...
Do you want to also use this mic correctly?
Yes. We don't have enough mics, everybody, for how many hosts
we have mics.
Now. Okay, mics. So Emily, you've started a new venture. How long has it been now?
So after being at JCK for 9.5 years, I went over to Jewelers Mutual Insurance. Amazing, sort of solid, sort of stalwart company, pillar of the industry, and the nicest people ever. And it's based in Neenah, Wisconsin. And Mark Smelzer, who was the longtime publisher for JCK, he was brought over to Jewelers Mutual to create different types of content, live content, print content, online content. So then he asked if I might want to jump over, and I did. It was ready. It was time. And we started the Zing Report, which was a B2B site, very much like JCK, but also a lot of fashion, a lot of design. Amy Elliott was one of the esteemed contributors. Many people mm-hmm. who I brought, I always try to like yank my favorites with me. And I've yanked her also into being a contributor.
Don't yank her too hard. She's got tendonitis. Okay.
Tendonitis.
I mean,
don't yank her too hard, darling.
I won't. I'll be careful with your tendonitis.
I was going to make a different joke about yanking, but I stopped myself, Amy.
Thank
for you.
And so now we have abandoned the Zing Report and all B2B stuff, and now we are doing only B2C in the content department at Jewelers Mutual, and that B2C brand is Gem and Jewel.
Incredible.
Which is a really fun name. There was sort of talk a little bit in the early days, like, is this the name we want? And then a couple of people, myself included, said, this is the best name ever for mm-hmm. this venture. Mm-hmm. It is a magazine. It's a website. It's a semi-annual magazine, full color, beautiful, glossy. We just shot something for the April issue yesterday that's very exciting. I can't wait for everyone to see. And there's obviously sort of like the suite of social that goes with it. And I feel like I wrangle the best writers in the industry. We have Tanya Dukes, Victoria Gomalski, Amy Elliott, Karen Divis from JCK, Randy Malofsky, who does all the sort of front of the book trend stuff because she's incredibly stylish and her, you know, finger is very much on the pulse of like what's coming next.
Mm-hmm. And visual. She's got and a visual.
Yeah. I mean, incredible. And I think that our goal is to elevate the love of jewelry and to kind of inspire people to spend their discretionary income on fine jewelry. Mm-hmm. And yeah, working on it.
Can I say something about the both of you, Amy and Emily? One of the big reasons that we're so excited to have you is I genuinely believe that not only are you two, in my view, sorry about it, the two most talented writers in the industry.
Oh, come on.
I've read many of your articles.
That is very nice.
And
that's very
nice. You're two of the most talented writers. You're two of, I think, the best thinkers as well in the industry. And I have immense respect for your brains, for the way that you operate, and for what you sort of contribute to the industry as a whole, which
is
why this is
that's really nice.
Which is why, to me, you two are playing with, you know, Tweedledee and Tweedledum over here.
Get out of here.
And we're very lucky to have you. And we're very, very lucky to have you both on board with us. But
well, that is very sweet and very generous.
That's really,
no, it's
really
true.
Nice.
It's all true. It's all true.
That space is getting more and more crowded with talented writers. So thank you.
You two
and
would not
be fashion writers
here.
Lose their positions, they invariably end up going and being jewelry writers.
Yep.
And no shade. I think it's great. Come on in.
But
there are
also
a lot of jewelry writers.
Don't come too fast.
Don't come too fast.
Exactly.
Still trying to make a buck here. Come on. But yeah, I believe that, and you wouldn't be here if JB and I both weren't in firm agreement about that. And we adore you both also as individuals.
Oh my
and
gosh.
All we
Back
know,
at you.
And we know that this is going to be not just, I think, a very successful venture, if I may say so myself, but I also know that the four of us are going to have a ton of fun together doing this.
We absolutely are. And you
and
two
a lot of
are
F-bombs.
Literally
Lots
the
of
most
F-bombs.
Fun people in the industry.
Absolutely.
So,
I
as
agree
you've
with
proven
that.
Over two years, I mean, and amazing thinkers as well, by the way.
Definitely. Yeah. And just like, I felt so simpatico with the Rough Cut the first time I listened to it. Mm-hmm. I like never listened to podcasts in bed, but I was like, oh, I can't wait. I can't sleep on this. I got to listen to it before I go to bed.
What else were you doing in bed when you were listening to it?
But in all seriousness to that, I am so excited because Amy is very opinionated.
Highly.
And
yes.
I love
and
that.
And I love that about Amy.
About Amy. And I'm really excited to see what she...
Oh, God. Again, my opinion.
Like it is.
My opinions are my own.
Yeah, I have to say that too. My opinions are my own.
We're going to have to start saying our opinions do not reflect Rough Cut. They are only our own.
We used to have to say a disclaimer.
But now we can
we
say whatever the fuck
anymore.
We want.
Yeah.
We used to do a disclaimer.
You used to have to say your
this is
well,
not
this
jewelry
guy.
Week.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. You never had a hot take. You never had a hot take on the show. Roll the tapes. All the listeners at home, roll the tapes.
I think there is still one I'm still trying to
Get away from. Yeah, well, guess what? I'm going to take that clip. I'm putting it on Instagram.
All right. Well, on that note, thank you. Thank you guys for being here all year.
I'm so excited.
This is like a dream. So excited.
We're so excited to have you. Thank you both so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you to our amazing listeners who, despite the fact that we've not posted in like 4 months plus, you are still listening to the show.
Thank you.
That's very stupid, by the way.
Please
but
stick around. Stick,
but
around.
Stick around.
And we have a new website.
There's a new website. There's also the Patreon. Right. And we haven't sorted everything about what's going to be on the Patreon out just yet, but we know we're going to continue to put exclusive content on the Patreon, so please subscribe because you support us. You're buying us coffee. These bitches drink a lot of coffee. And I don't buy cheap coffee, so you got to do the Patreon so I can at least take care of them.
Alon does not have milk or sugar in his home on any regular basis.
Because not enough people support the Patreon.
Yeah.
I can't afford it.
I had to steal some Sweet and Lows from Zabarro.
She did. She came with Sweet and Low in her pocket because I can't afford it in this economy. Are you crazy?
You cannot drink Sweet and Low.
I know.
Cancer.
You have to I do Truvia at home, but when I'm out in the world, I do Sweet and Low because I'm a child of the 70s.
What is Equal, though? What is Equal? Is that different?
It's granular. The thing about Sweet and Low is that it's powdered. I know there's like all kinds of gnarly stuff.
Oh, you don't like the granular stuff.
Well, it just I grew up on well, when I became a coffee drinker, I was like all Sweet and Low all the time. So I have grown accustomed to the way it dissolves. I don't use a full packet.
Okay,
I use half a packet. Ask my husband.
I leave debris. And I'm going to stop you from doing this from now on.
Okay. Yeah. I leave debris all around the house, like half used packets. So I just, you know, I've switched. I like would have done Truvia for a long time. Like I would say majority Truvia.
Okay, good.
Can I just
feel
say
better.
This is such an important conversation to have on the show too? This is like really pertinent information.
This is that hard-hitting journalism.
This is exactly what we were talking about. How do you take your coffee, Emily? Yeah. Let's go around the table.
Well, I didn't show up until I had a rider. I had a rider.
Okay, I will say this. I get a text message from Miss Penis over here who is like telling me like, last time I was there, you didn't have X, Y, Z at this your fucking penis. House. And then it like gives me a list. She's like, you need this or this, or I'm not showing the fuck up. That's what she said.
I did not.
Yes,
say
she did.
That.
I'm going to post
not
it on Instagram.
True.
No, it's not true.
Listen,
she didn't say that.
But I am a coffee freak. So my personality doesn't exist without it. So.
Well, but and last time we spiked your coffee, and then you had a really great time.
Yeah, that's true.
So
we're
going to get drunk at some point today, I'm pretty sure.
On that note.
Roughcut.show.
Roughcut.show is our new website.
Yeah, our new website.
We'll link it.
Find us there. You can find all our socials there, so you can follow everyone.
Patreon.
And our Patreon link. And thanks for being here.
Bills.
This has been Rough Cut.
This has been Rough Cut. Thank you so much. Ladies, your first ever official Rough Cut sign-off as co-hosts, co-producers. Please say goodbye.
1, 2, 3. This has been...
Okay, wow. That went very poorly. Let's try that again.
So we'll say this has been
Rough Cut.
Ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
This has been Rough Cut.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Aw. Do you only wear 22 karat gold?
I'll go down to 18, but I prefer 22.
Okay.
Yeah, I prefer 22.
He prefers.
In case you were making
22.
Any gifts, we're also going to link my ring sizes.
Exactly. Yes, like a little ride, like a little dossier.
Yeah, we'll have a little dossier, and sizes. We'll have my wrist size. We'll have everything included.
Amazing.
And I'll have a shipping address.
Exactly.
But you're also welcome to drop off in person.
And up.
You don't have to ship.
Oh my God.
You can just come to my place and give it to me.